Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. My belly is quite gurgly today, so you might hear it in the background from my little intro and my outro. Actually, do you know what? I'm not going to bother with an outro because... Oh, there we go. Anyway, let me just introduce my next guest. It is Claire Balding, who I know as Claire Fulham because I went to school with her and I've known her for since we were, 11? She has just launched a brand new hairdressing salon and scalp specialist called Pello. It's in Artane, as far as I know. But if you follow her at Claire Balding, you will find it all the details. Claire is a huge social media star for having documented her experience with alopecia. So that explains why she's gone into the hair and the hair scalp specialist stuff. She just was like an overnight sensation on Snapchat for the way that she very, very vulnerably and honestly shared everything from the hilarious moments right down to the lowest lows when she lost her hair and what that meant for her and how that was trying to piece herself back together again. She really is a very inspiring woman, and I'm so glad to know her, and I'm so lucky to have had the time to sit down with her and have the chat. And she's just like full of the pearls of wisdom. I honestly wanted to have a pen and paper by my side to jot everything down that she was saying, because she is going to give you some major life advice here, and I hope you enjoy the chat as much as I did. So give Claire a follow. I'm sure you are already following her. She's amazing, and it's great to see her take something that was so negative and so tough and turn it into something really positive that's helping so many other people. So she's a woman after my own heart. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Thank you, as always, for the feedback. I recorded a live episode at Wellfest just this weekend past, and I was so lucky. I got to meet people in person afterwards who had brought their books with them, or who just wanted to come up and tell me that they loved the podcast, or that they stumbled upon it at a time when they really needed to hear something like this, or they needed to know that their anxiety was normal and justified, and that they weren't going crazy, and that they weren't alone. So it was really, really nice to get that feedback. And God, I just can't believe the reaction that this series is having. I never thought it would go this far, and I'm just so grateful to all of you who are still with me, still listening, and still on your journey to owning it, because it is, you know, it's an ongoing thing. It's not something we do and then we finish and then we're done. It's all the time. So enjoy, and thank you so much. So I suppose people probably don't realise is that we went to school together.
I know, yeah.
And everyone calls me Claire Balding. It's like, it's your surname.
It's Fulham.
And when I say it, people are like, what? Like, yeah, Claire Balding. It's like, you know, that's not her surname.
Yeah.
People actually believe that it is. But yeah, they don't know that we went to school together in Mount Temple, which was just like a joyous
gas
place to be.
Yeah.
I just, you couldn't get a better school, could you? Like, we had such a good experience. That said, I still had my own kind of anxiety experience. But looking back, from my memories of you in school, I would have thought you were just the most confident person in the world, and anxiety was something that...
Far, far away.
Far, far away. Is that true?
Probably.
probably then it was, yeah. But now, like now looking back, I probably was like heading myself into a direction of a hair loss scenario. Yeah. So like, I suppose like, oh yeah, I never suffered from it really ever. Do you know that kind of way? But then obviously the, when my hair fell out, it was kind of, I never ever used the words, I am suffering from anxiety or I have anxiety, because it was kind of, it's pockets for me. It's kind of, and I've lived with anxiety in different ways over the past number of years, and probably always did, because we all have anxious periods in our life.
Yeah.
But I never kind of used those words or that term in that kind of way.
Yeah, those words are hard because I think we feel like that means that we are defining ourselves by it. And what I always say to everyone is, look, we all have a stress response, and anxiety is going to pop up sometimes.
Yeah.
And you might be someone who's a bit more prone to it.
Yeah.
Or you might be someone who's not. But I don't think there's anyone who can go through life with the pulse and not feel it at some time you feel like you're completely mad for going through it.
But yeah.
So what age were you when you started to become aware that stress and anxiety were affecting you?
Really, when I was bald.
Okay, so the hair, so yeah, take me back then. Yeah. Did the hair just start falling out? What was going on in your life at the time?
So it was 3 years ago in May, and I noticed a little bald spot. So I kind of carried on or whatever, but I did notice I had loads of hair, didn't I? Like, yeah. I do again now.
Envious hair and the eyelashes as well.
Well, I was, so I had loads of hair. So I, like different periods of time, like we all lose 100 hairs a day, like that's really normal. But I did notice that my hair was falling a lot more. But again, coming into summertime, it normally happens that there's an increase in hair fall. Like animals, we kind of shed for the good weather that we barely ever get. So I kind of did notice that. Like I was kind of scraping it up like at my desk and stuff and work and putting it in the bin and going, Jesus, that's a lot, like, you know. But again, didn't really think about it. But when I found the little spot, I kind of said, right, hold on a second. And then I started to feel my hair and I noticed that, oh God, that is thinner than usual. So a couple of days later, I was in the doctor's. She examined my head, and I actually had 5 big spots on my head that I hadn't noticed. So very quickly, things started to get kind of out of control. Like panic, I'd say, kind of came over me, and a huge fear of going, what the feck is going to happen in the next days? I didn't know. And why was this happening? I couldn't explain. And neither could they. Like, they kind of, you know, it could be this, it could be this. Go to a dermatologist, around loads of dermatologists. They were like 6 weeks, 8 weeks. And I just knew that I wouldn't have hair then in 6 to 8 weeks. So I found a trichologist, which specializes in hair loss and the scalp. And they diagnosed me now with alopecia areata. So within that 3 weeks, I was in a wig.
Oh my God.
So I'd lost 70% of my hair in 3 weeks, which again, for someone who has so much hair, it's nearly 2 people's heads of hair. It's a huge amount of hair to lose, you know. So,
obviously that was unbelievable amount of stress and panic and terror probably to have that 3 week period. But was it brought on by stress? Obviously it caused a lot of stress, but was the stress, which came first?
I think that looking back at it now, like I was really determined and I'd kind of give out and like deny the fact that I was stressed because I had a good life. Like looking in on my life, I had a good life, you know?
Yeah,
like
we always make ourselves feel
bad. And And like, I mean, I was married to Ian, who I'd been with since I was like 18. We've got 2 gorgeous kids. We've got our lovely little house in Marino, and we're both working, and we're both very privileged people and happy, like genuinely a happy little household. But I think, look, and it took me a long time to be able to say I was stressed, and that's what caused my hair loss, because it was like, it's probably genetic. And I was like going through family trees trying to find some bald women in my family, and there was none, you know. And I think it took me probably a good 2 years to come to the realization that it was stress that made my hair fall out. So like I was pregnant at 22. I very quickly grew up, and I kind of, like I always do, and Ian's a very kind of quite strong-willed person as well. We kind of said, we're going to make the most of this and get on with it. You know, and we had kind of a mad 7 years. Farrah was born when we were 23. We bought a house at 23. We, you know, had our second child at 27. We had a surprise wedding in the middle of all that. All of these things, you know, are stressful things in people's life and big life-changing moments. We kind of just took them in our stride.
Yeah.
And I think actually looking back on it, it was the reflection of, I didn't take a breath for about 7 years, you know. And then when Elliot came along, then my hair was falling out. Elliot was about a year and a half, and he didn't sleep at all. So I was running on, like, I remember one day I went into work and I had 15 minutes sleep, and I went with a smile on my face, did a great job, went home and collapsed, and but I had to look after kids and a house. And, you know, it was, I think it was a physical stress that I was under, you know.
And did you feel something that my big issue was, and I feel like a lot of people's issue is that, you know, you say you didn't want to admit that it was stress,
yeah,
because is it what you were looking for, something to blame,
yeah,
something like tangible that would say it's mm-hmm. not your fault,
yeah,
and if it's stress,
it's all your fault.
It's all your fault.
Yeah.
And that's very hard to yeah. swallow.
And a few people would say that to you, what are you stressed about? And then that makes it feel so much worse. Then there's all this level of huge shame
yeah.
to do with stress, you know, that yeah. kind of way, or anxiety or depression is a huge kind of shame about not having it together. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think most of us have it together, you know? And I think that really only the past couple of years, I found out that I've been kind of surrounding myself with people who are very open about not having all their shit together.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the kind of people I admire the most, that are the ones that are able to be vulnerable and honest about the shit times as much as the good times, yeah. in that kind of way.
We need to let ourselves off the hook as well, though. I think like so much of the stress and anxiety we feel is because we're afraid that it makes us look pathetic, or yeah. that like what will people think of us, because like you say, you were so privileged, mm-hmm. and certainly I had no kids, I had everything going for
yeah.
me. What right, in my head I was like, what right do yeah. I have to fall apart? But a lot of that was kind of self-stigma,
yeah,
you know. I say, oh, people sort of say like, what have you got to be worried about, and they did, but so much of the stigma and the shame was like coming from myself,
yeah,
and probably from yourself,
yeah, 100%, yeah. Because then when you do look at it, like you just said, you had no kids, like if I met you on the street there, you'd be like, of course Claire's fucking stressed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah.
It's you, like, you kind of put so much kind of blame on yourself, and it's so self-inflicted, because like when people look at it, is a stressful life in general.
Mm.
No matter what life you lead, stress has come up, you know? Nobody has the perfect run of things, you know?
Mm.
But I think definitely it took me a long time to get to the point where now I openly say my hair fell out because I'm stressed.
Yeah.
And then I can see sometimes still people kind of going, Jesus, like, I felt like people wouldn't trust me again to cope.
Mm,
do you know? Yeah. I felt like people were like, oh, we can't tell Claire that, because if I tell Claire that, her hair will fall out again.
Yeah.
Or I can't ask Claire for help, because I kind of feel like, you know, she's so delicate now. Whereas I'm not delicate, actually. I'm one of the strongest people I know. Do you know? I always have been, and I'm very determined and very well able to look after myself most of the time. But I, you know, so I kind of didn't want that stigma on me. I didn't want to be the one that needed the help, or the delicate one, you know?
Yeah, I know. And talk to me about the anxiety when, after that 3-week period, and you get the diagnosis and you're wearing a wig.
Mm-hmm.
Just what was the lowest moment for you?
I think, yeah, I described, like, I had a week. So it was like the third week, the week I got my wig, and I didn't get out of bed. I called in sick to work. I just didn't get out of bed. I was watching Made in Chelsea like all day, every day, eating chocolate, crying with like hair everywhere, tumbleweeds of hair like everywhere, and like avoid, like closing my eyes, going past mirrors, so I couldn't bear to see what was looking back at me. And I remember that was kind of, I describe as the worst week of my life. I'm kind of very quickly, I'm kind of emotional.
Okay.
I think it's because I know, you know, yeah. you know when you know someone, you're well able to say, but I think very quickly I kind of found myself a very different person. So I went from someone who was coping okay to obviously getting this kind of devastating news that all of your hair is about to fall out. And I still even cope with that quite well within those couple of weeks. But then I gave up, and I suddenly kind of felt myself being in this space of quite a hellish kind of time in my head, and kind of feeling that I don't know, that it's actually easier to stay in this hell than keep trying to get better.
Mm-hmm.
It's more tiring to put on a wig and to put on a smile and to go to work and to look out. That's really tiring to pretend to be okay all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas even though this was shit, it was a lot easier to lie here watching Made in Chelsea eating chocolate, because I was ignoring it a little bit. You know what I mean? I wasn't trying to thread that water anymore. I kind of got really happy in hell.
Mm.
And that scared the shit out of me.
Because
I was like, Claire, if you don't get up now, I don't know how long I would have lain in that bed for. So I gave myself a couple of days. I was like, no, you're entitled to this now. Just do this for a couple of days. But I remember I got a phone call from my mom, and she just kicked the shit out of me over the phone and was like, Claire, you want, like, cause I got very dark very, very quickly. Like, and really kind of thoughts would come into my mind that, like, why would Ian ever want to look at me again? Why would my kids are going to be embarrassed? Like, all this kind of stuff. And I was kind of like, sorry, Caroline, why am I getting upset?
No, it's okay. Well, I'm making you talk about stuff.
But I never, like, I get on the radio. I think it's cause I know you.
I know.
And it's kind of like, oh God, it was horrible. But these horrible thoughts that were set, that I kind of, I'm ashamed of still, that I was like, this, I can't live this life. And like, when I look back on it, this is, it's only kind of recently I thought about it, and I was very ill. I was very ill at that time, and I didn't know.
And mentally ill as well.
Mentally ill, yeah. And like, it's so hard to kind of describe that to people, because like people, you know, unless you have a disease, a physical disease, people really don't really take you very seriously sometimes.
Yeah.
And when I look back at it, like, my life was threatened at that time. My head was somewhere completely different at the time, but I played it down. And the way I dealt with it, which is bizarre, and I say it sometimes very Robin Williams of me altogether, was to put on a wig and go on telly. Like, that's mad. You know what I mean?
But it's sort of like, it becomes a coping strategy in that you put it out there and you're like, for me, it was the same thing where I started writing articles about anxiety because I was craving people to say, I understand.
Yeah.
I get it. And then what I didn't expect was people would say, oh my God, me too.
Yeah.
And then you're helping people and also helping, like, it's sort of cathartic for yourself.
Yeah.
And it's easier sometimes to, I guess, if you go on a platform, like go on TV and say, this is what I'm going through. You don't have to have any more conversations. It's like, you know, telling people about a breakup. You just want it to be broadcast so that no one has to keep asking you.
Yeah.
Were you afraid, you know, in those days where you said, like, I can't put the wig on, I can't go on, put a smile on, did you feel like you had to put a smile on? Or did you feel like in work, would it have been pressure for you to kind of go in and be like, I'm not okay?
Yeah, I amn't a person who likes to let others down. So it was very difficult for me to like take those days off work. And within that whole period in the last 3 years, I only took those 4 days, 5 days off work, you know. And yeah, I felt a huge pressure to be okay, to look okay. To, you know, like, even when my hair wasn't completely falling out, I could hide it. But I was so self-conscious for other people about how they were going to react to the way I looked.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of felt this huge pressure. And it wasn't coming from me, actually, really. It was coming, I felt a pressure from others, like in work, or like, I know so many people that used to cross the road when they'd see me, like friends, like, you know, for life, or friends, like neighbors and stuff, like, oh shit, like, what do you say to the girl that's wearing a wig? And because it's not like, and I had so many chemotherapy patients coming to me going, Claire, do you know what, you know, I know my hair is going to grow back, and I'm risking my life for my hair, and that's a risk that you're going to fucking take.
Yeah.
They're like, you don't know when your hair is going to grow back, and it's a really odd reason why it's falling out, so people avoid you, you know, that kind of way. And people walk the other side of the road because they don't want to have that awkward conversation, so you totally feel isolated. Now, there was times where, like, I didn't leave the house. Like, I didn't really, I mean, I talk about this, I set up a Snapchat account, like, all of a sudden I had thousands of people watching my every move, and it was a great kind of therapy for me, and a help and a willingness. I wanted as many people willing me to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And keeping an eye on me, really, to be honest. I wanted people to keep an eye on how I was doing. Yeah. But I didn't, and I used to kind of even lie about on Snapchat in the early days about leaving the house. I didn't leave the house for, I don't know, 3 months, really. Like, I stayed there. I'd go to work, I'd come back, and I'd run up the road and run back. Like, I'd be terrified. So those people that ignored me, I was kind of grateful in one aspect, because I was like, I don't want to talk to anybody. But, like, it was a weird time where it kind of very, very quickly manifested into something that was so alien to my life.
And I never felt anxiety like it before.
No.
Did you have any panic?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Yeah.
What were they like?
I thought I was going to die. It was in the bed that week. Like, I'd say I had two. I remember actually, like, I think I had one in the doctor's surgery one day. I went down and I just said, I need a pill. Like, I was like, you're going to have to stop me. Like, I need medication. Like, I keep thinking, like, my heart was racing. I couldn't see. Panicked, sheer terror, you know? And, like, I remember in the doctor's, and she was like, Claire, and she actually showed me, she had alopecia areata as well, but she had this gorgeous big black long hair, and she showed me the spots in her head. And now she was like, now yours is much worse, but it will grow back. And she kind of gave me, calmed me down a lot. And
how did she know it would grow back? Just because she, it's the nature of it?
Yeah. So it's normally, like, it's a very kind of triggering thing to happen, but generally people with alopecia, I know hundreds of types of different alopecias, but areata normally grows back.
Okay.
But mine was very severe. So people can hide it very well. Like, a lot of people have it. They don't even know they have it. It could be the back of their head. Their hairdresser would see it. Their hairdresser would ignore it.
Right, okay.
I wouldn't ignore it if I saw it, because you need to kind of make the person aware. But
was there anything you could do except wait for it to go back and try and relax, which is the worst thing
you
could be told?
I know, when your hair's falling out, it's like, stop stressing. It's like, are you joking? I went to a clinic. I attended a clinic for 20 weeks. And the Universal Hair and Scalp Clinic on Georgia Street. You know the big sign, like, why go bald on Georgia Street? And I remember me and Sarah Abazenin were walking past that one day, going, like, when we were 16.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Going, imagine having to come in there. And here I was, like, paid 500 quid going in, going, here, really help me. Like, it's actually sick when I think about it. But so I went there for 20 weeks. And I don't think that's completely responsible for my hair coming back at all. I think there's a combination of a lot of things. But what it did for me was give me some sort of level of control. So it gave me something like, I'm being proactive. I'm going in every week and I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And actually, when I think I was in my 8th week there, and I didn't want to go in. Like, I didn't want to take off my wig. I didn't want someone to massage my head. I didn't want to have to scurry through Dame Street with my wig on, with the oily scalp. I just didn't want to do it. And I went into the, I don't know where it is. I think it's the Mercantile Bar. Mm-hmm. And I went in, it was in August. It was really, really sunny. And I went in, I ordered myself a gin, like, on my own, like, completely. I'm like, Claire, this is a rabbit hole. I went in on my own, had a gin, sat there going, I'm not going to go. I'm just going to ring them and say something's come up. I can't cope with it today. I just can't.
Yeah.
Then ordered myself another gin, sat there. And then I was looking out and, like, beside the Stag's Head and stuff, and it was a really, really sunny day. And there was this man who was just sitting there on the ground, like, begging. And I was like, you selfish little shit, Claire. Get yourself up off your hole and go and take control of this now. And I was like, if this is the worst thing that will happen, and it was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
But if this is the worst thing that will happen in your life, you're a lucky bitch. Get up off your fat arse.
Mm-hmm.
And I got up and I was like, I don't actually need my hair to live. I don't need my hair for people to think I'm beautiful. I don't need my hair to walk, to talk, to love my kids. I don't need it. Do I want it?
Yeah.
Do I want it? I do want it. I want it because of all the repercussions of not having it. But I really need to just let it go now and accept that I don't have hair. So I did. So I, 10 minutes late, ran up the stairs. Sorry. Went in to the place and she took off my wig or whatever. We're having a chat. And it was the very first girl that gave me the treatment. Her name was Kenny. And I hadn't seen her in a couple of weeks or whatever. And she, like, nearly started crying. She's like, Claire, you've got hair all over your head. And I was like, sorry? She's like, you've got hair all over your head. Give me your phone. She gave me my phone, she took a picture and had all these tiny white baby hairs all over my head. And I was like, they weren't there this morning. And she was like, well, they probably were, but, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was literally like the moment that I just actually let it go, the moment that I was like, that's okay now, Claire, and you're going to be absolutely fine, was the moment that changed everything for me then, that I could actually see light at the end of the tunnel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was only a very short period of time. That was only like 9 weeks, you know? 12 weeks, really, like, when it started to fall out, that it started to get better quickly. But then there was the terror that it would go again, because these little, like, you know, white hairs of hope, I didn't know would last very long. Do you know that kind of way? And sometimes that happens, it grows back and then it falls back out again, all that kind of stuff. So as much as it brought me joy and happiness and calm
and hope,
yeah, it scared the shit out of me as well, you know?
Yeah, Georgie was saying something similar about, like, it took her so long to get to the point where she didn't wake up fearing that the cancer would come back. And I always say this, but I hate comparing my experience of just regular, I guess, anxiety to what you went through or what Georgie went through. But for me, for so long, when I felt like I was getting control of my anxiety again and I wasn't having such severe panic attacks, like, or I could leave the house,
mm-hmm.
I lived in fear that it's just going to come and take over again.
Yeah.
When it was actually something, unlike cancer or unlike hair loss, it was something that I could control,
mm-hmm.
but I felt like I couldn't.
You couldn't, yeah. And that's the same thing. Yeah. Like, when you think about it, it's what the way you feel is the level of control that you have. Do you know what I mean? So regardless of a disease or, you know, like, it's completely, it's the way it, like, manifests for you, do you know?
It's interesting, like, that you say that, you know, the moment you sort of said you stop resisting where you were.
Yeah.
Things changed.
Yeah.
And I think going forward in life, like, you must have learned such a valuable lesson to accept where you are when you're there.
Yeah.
Instead of, for you, whatever about the hair growing back, for you emotionally, if you kept resisting that,
mm-hmm.
you were going to stay in this dark hole.
Yeah.
And, like, acceptance, no matter what your situation, is the hardest thing.
Yeah.
But it's the most crucial thing.
Yeah. And I think it takes people a long time to get there, you know? Yeah. And I think that actually what helped me was talking about it. And on, you know, I always say, like, Snapchat saved my life, and it sounds like the most dramatic thing ever, but it really did. It kind of allowed me to vocalize what I was going through, but it also kind of, you know, I entered that little community to kind of draw strength from it.
Yeah.
And then hopefully give strength back too, which I know I have done, which is an amazing feeling as well, you know. But selfishly, I went into it originally so that some American doctor would get in touch, like, I'll give you a hair transplant. You know what I mean? That's why I did it. Like, because I was like, somebody has to know what's happening, you know. But they didn't. But I think really and truly, the kind of just being able to, like, the hardest thing to do is to allow yourself to be so vulnerable. Like, you know, like, it's kind of, I think vulnerability is really, really interesting, because it's like, it's real physical, the physical manifestation of vulnerability is very similar to the kind of mental state of vulnerability. So, like, you know, when you feel like you're in the nip in front of your boss and they walk and, like, you've nowhere to go and it's like an empty room and you're just like that, you just want to crawl into yourself.
Yeah.
And that kind of, remember that leap of me putting it on Facebook that I was losing my hair to my 400 friends, you know what I mean? That was terrifying. When I pressed that button send and I walked outside, I didn't go back to the computer. But when I came back to it, this huge level of hope and interest and just a willingness for you to be okay was completely overwhelming, you know?
I just feel like something I've learned and something that I'm hopefully going to explore in my third book is this whole thing of, like, the power of your vulnerability and actually the kind of irony that when you're willing to be vulnerable and say, here I am, here I am with no hair, here I am with panic attacks, here I am with cancer, whatever it is. Or for my brother, I did an episode with him, he had a very hard time with his stammer. And he remembered that one time he pushed the button on a post saying, this is what I'm going through. When you are willing to be vulnerable, in a way it makes you invulnerable. Like, it makes you resilient, because it's like, it's like, you know, saying, I know I'm shit before you say I'm shit.
Yeah, and I'm really like that. I'm like, I'm a really bad dancer just before I get up to dance.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't judge me.
Yeah, it's like, I'm allowed to laugh at myself. Like, I'm taking that power away from somebody else. I think that's kind of what why I told people as well. It was kind of, first of all, like, you're living in kind of shame. You have a wig and you're self-conscious about the wig, so I didn't want that. And it's a stress in itself to wear a wig when you're trying to disguise it, you know? When people were telling me, like, I'm going to do chemotherapy, Claire, so it's almost acceptable for them to wear a wig. I was like, where the fuck is Claire Fulham wearing a wig? She's not sick. What's wrong with her? Do you know what I mean? So it was this kind of level of shame to try and hide that, you know? So that's why I kind of did that. I was like, I need this to be free. I need to say it, as terrifying as it is. And it is like jumping off a cliff. It's literally
How did you feel when you did it?
I was terrified. But I immediately felt better. I immediately felt like, oh my God, like, this has just been such a weight, even for that short period of time. It's been such a weight on my shoulders and on my heart. And to be able to just say it out loud, just kind of, you know, the mist started to clear a little bit,
Did you feel as a result of that the anxiety started to lift a little bit as well?
Yeah, but then it grows in different ways, because then you've got people watching you.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about next. Was, okay, in order to put yourself out there on social media to the extent that you do, you need to have a very strong sense of who you are and what your values are and your sense of self-worth, because otherwise you're completely porous. Mm-hmm. And I know you say that in the beginning, there was a whole well of support, yeah. but there's going to be shit as well.
Oh, yeah.
So have you learned that as you've gone on social media, mm-hmm. or did you kind of go into it knowing this is what I'm about, this is what's important to me?
No, I've learned it through social media. So like I would, you know, like all of us, we'd be self-conscious yeah. about different things, or we'd worry what people thought about us. And, you know, not any more than anyone else, just normal, mm-hmm. you know. But I think what this experience has taught me is that like nothing physical defines you at all, whether it be hair or your waistline or mm-hmm. your crooked nose or whatever it is. Like, unfortunately, I'm looking at those lovely tulips up there, but that's what we're like. Mm. We fade and we're going to get saggy tits and we're going to get wrinkles and our hair is going to fall out. And those things, and what actually matters is you and the person you are and the person you are to others. Mm. And I figured that out over the past little while. I think it's actually a really nice position to be in at like 31 to actually completely just be okay with who I am, and nothing physical matters to me anymore. Of course, I'm in love with my hair again. I'm delighted it's back.
It's amazing.
But it doesn't define me at all, you know, and nothing does.
You'd be you with or without it now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know people will love me either way. And that's the fear. And when you go on social media and you talk to thousands of people every day, and the response that you get and the warmth that you get from that lifts you up. And I'd rather, that's a better feeling than, yeah, like a type of criticism, let's say, mm-hmm. like people kind of having opinions on me, or people like giving out about me, all that kind of stuff.
What are they saying? What are they?
Oh, they just hate me. Some people just really hate me because I'm able to completely be myself, I think. And I think it's a real liberating feeling when you work out who you are and who you want to be and just live unapologetically that way. People are threatened by that. In that kind of way, they wouldn't say that. They're just like, oh, Claire's a fat bitch. I'm like, fact. That doesn't bother me. Or like, you know, like they'd criticize the way I live my life or the way I am with my kids or the way I am with, they literally just give out about everything, like everything.
And are you very well able to know that that's their problem? Or yeah. do you, like, has there been a time where something has really gotten under your skin?
When I started to earn money through Claire Balding, they had a real problem with that. So I do like live shows and mm-hmm. stuff. We started it last June and we've booked 10. We've nearly sold them all out. It's amazing. And people, I think when you start to earn money through something, they don't have, it's real Irish begrudgery, isn't it? It's kind of like, how dare she?
Well, you know, like every poet or director or anything yeah. who ever has gone through something has used that as inspiration to do something. Yeah. And people who, like, everyone's success has probably come from some kind of yeah. struggle or adversity yeah. in some way. And I just think that's bullshit. I mean, I get a small bit of it as well. And I wanted to ask you about it because I'm on a much smaller scale in terms of followers, but I'm so not used to it. I had one person a while ago was just like, you're an absolute, you're an embarrassment. Like, you're capitalizing on anxiety and stuff. And I was like, well, I'm also like making a difference. Like, people are actually really yeah. finding it helpful. And if it means, if me being able to do that more means like I can survive and pay my mortgage, like I was so upset by it because yeah. I just was like, I felt like maybe I believed her a little
you
bit or something.
You question yourself then, yeah. You yeah. allow that to kind of get in.
Yeah,
and
she was like, your anxiety is like pathetic. You don't know what anxiety is. And like, I really wanted to go back and be like, I was suicidal yeah. at a point. My yeah. anxiety was so bad. I was, you know, it was months on end. And I didn't, what was worse for me is I didn't have anything to pin the blame on. There was nothing I could yeah. say, this is why. Because it was just like, yeah. you should be okay, you fucking Egypt.
Yeah.
Why aren't you? Yeah. So in a way, that was almost more anxiety inducing. Yeah. But then I'm like, Caroline, I catch myself and I'm like, you cannot reply to this person because she's obviously in a bad way,
yeah.
whoever she is. And everyone's experience of anxiety or anything is different, but it's all relative to everyone.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't need to justify my anxiety.
No. Never.
You know? And you don't need to justify mm-hmm. that you lost your hair as yeah. to why, or and how then you gave yourself a profile, a platform, and now you're a really positive influence in people's lives.
Yeah. And I think that it really is when you it really is, I think, the money thing that people have a problem with
yeah.
in that kind of way. But like you say, like every, you know, entertaining person or anyone we take any sort of strength from really yeah. has to pay their yeah. mortgage.
Think of Adele.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? She yeah. doesn't apologize for when no. you buy her CD or whatever. Do you know that kind of way? And then I think I actually had a rant about that one time, and it was I actually screenshot I got of like a Facebook group or whatever, and they were all, you know, taunting up how much I earned this year and all this kind of stuff.
And
they rang my job and asked, you know, like mad stuff, tried to figure out how much money I was on in my job because it was a government, all this kind of stuff.
Oh my God, Claire.
Too far, like, you know. And I just think that if you are that obsessed with finding out or hating on someone, you really shouldn't be watching them, for Christ's sake. Isn't that kind of right? There's a difference of watching someone that annoys you and you kind of get a bit of a, you know what I mean? You self-punish me in a way. Yeah. You just keep watching. You're like, what is she doing? And tapping through. But in no way in hell would I publicly write that into a group that's able to be screenshotted and sent to that person, because I would absolutely hate to hurt someone's feelings. Like, it's incredible. But there's people out there that really have problems with that, you know, that kind of way. Or who does she think she is? Like, you know, why the hell would you go and watch Claire's show? And they're the people that aren't there, you know, that kind of way.
Have you gotten negative feedback for the fact, like, I know on your Instagram you say, lost my hair, still banging on about it.
Yeah.
Do you get people saying, oh, like, your hair's back, get over it?
Yeah.
You can't still be, like, doing this?
Yeah, sometimes are people kind of are angry at me if I've said this is what worked for me and they've done everything I've done and it hasn't grown back, you know, that kind of way. But like you just said there, you kind of have to say, well, they're not in a good place right now. And I understand that. And every time I'd recommend something, I'd say, this is what I did, but it's not going to work for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I have to be very careful that, because there was a time where I would have spent a small fortune on anything, just, you know, the wish or the promise that it would grow back, you know. And I think I've been quite careful in terms of, like, you know what it's like. Like, I've gotten offered a lot of money over the past 2 years, especially as the platform grows and as I do more things and stuff. And will you promote this shampoo? Will you promote this vitamin? And I'm talking thousands of euro for a couple of Instagram posts and everything else. And I've said no to all of those things. And it hurt me to say no, because we struggle.
Yeah.
We're not well off, you know what I mean? So, but I think what it's allowed me to do, it's still given me a credibility in terms of people still believe me when I say, I really like this shampoo. Yeah. Or I really like that. Will it make your hair grow? No, it's an illuminating shampoo. It's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, I'm very honest with all that kind of stuff. And I would never sell people down the garden path. And I think that's what's allowed me to do what I'm about to do next in terms of open the salon and the hair and scalp clinic. Because people have a level of trust for me and I have a genuine care for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to make a difference to them. And I really want to try and help them in some way. Because I know how much hair loss has affected my life and still affects it every day, you know, that kind of way. Like, I think, and I was listening to Georgie and yourself, and when she, you know, and I'm saying inverted commas, got better, people were like, oh, you kind of have to be the old Georgie again. Now, come on now, you've had your time to moan about it or cry about it or whatever. And I think the moment I took off my wig, which was 2 years ago in January, I looked ridiculous. But anyway, I took it off. I said, I'm not using this anymore. I'm just going to look the way I look. And everyone kind of forgot about me again then. Like, I'm not talking about, like, my family and my friends, kind of. You know, they were kind of like, oh, you're grand now.
Mm.
But I really wasn't, like, I really wasn't okay still. Because
the emotional stuff doesn't end.
No.
You know,
it's something that will be with me for the rest of my life. And I kind of have to try and learn to live in this world safely. And I mean, by this world, me, in my head. You know, that kind of way.
If you're afraid, or if you know that it was, if you could now come to me, say, it was a stressful time in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make you fearful of ever getting stressed again?
No.
Okay, that's good.
Because I think, I mean, none of us can avoid day-to-day stress. You know, that kind of stuff. And I have had stressful times since then, you know, like loads of them. Like, so I don't worry in that regard. I think I remember the type of stress I was under then. And it was a real desperate, tired state is probably what I'd say. I was so exhausted. I can't even begin to describe how physically exhausted I was. And then a few weeks later, my hair fell out. So I haven't felt that level of kind of pure exhaustion. And I remember the nice doctor I told you about, that had alopecia as well. She said, isn't it funny how your body picked your hair? Because if my body had a picked bad skin, I would have lashed the L concealer on and got on with my day. If my body had picked maybe a rash on my body or something else, or, you know, like huge weight gain, huge weight loss, anything, I would have kind of coped with it better than my hair, because my hair was my thing. It's like, oh, you know, Claire with the red hair.
Mm.
And my body knew that this girl isn't going to wake up any other way but to just get rid of her hair.
Mm.
And that was the realization, the wake up call that I needed. But like, I'm not afraid of stress because we can't avoid it. And I'm actually not too bad at dealing with it. As funny as that sounds, me sitting here saying stress caused my hair.
Mm.
I'm not. Like, I'm kind of, I love a bit of stress in my life. I love a bit of chaos. I love a bit of pressure, because I kind of thrive on those kind of things, you know?
I think something that I covered in Owning It was this TED talk by Kelly McGonigal. She's some brilliant woman anyway. You should watch it. And she talks about the fact that, okay, stress is obviously unavoidable in our lives, and we go through life trying to avoid it, and we get more stress. And what matters more than stress being in your body is your perception of stress. They did this study of hundreds of people in America, and the people who had stressful lives, who thought that it was going to really affect their health, mm-hmm. were like far more likely to die than the people who had stress but didn't think it was a problem. Or the people who had stress but didn't think it was an issue were far less likely to die than people who had no stress at all.
That's interesting.
So it's how you, your kind of relationship with stress and expecting, sometimes I'm going to feel it, sometimes I'm not going to feel it. Mm-hmm. But I think, like you say, like the hair loss made you wake up and you're awake now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, you know, I think it's the same for myself or anyone I've spoken to, where I don't think you'll ever get to that point again, because you're aware and you obviously know yourself so well now, mm-hmm. and you would recognize if things are getting a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And you must have learned so much about yourself. Like, what is the greatest thing you've learned?
To be yourself. Mm-hmm. To understand who you want to be in this world. And I kind of like, and in my shows, I go into it a lot in terms of like, you know, and it's like, this was like, my hair was supposed to come out. My hair was supposed to be my best feature I had. And then it was pulled from me.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to go through this. I was supposed to be a shoulder to cry on, even though I've never met Sandra from Mayo. Do you know what I mean? Or Kelly in Dubai, or all these people that I connect with on a daily basis that get some level of a smile from me, or a piece of joy from me, sharing my family, sharing my shit times, you know, all that kind of stuff. Just living your life and kind of making other people feel less alone in theirs. And I think that that's what social media has done for me. And I'm very thankful for that, you know, that I'm able to be in other people's lives that I'll never meet in my whole life, you know, but how grateful I am for those people that pulled me out of depths of sadness. And I think that the kind of ability to know that I'm so much more than my physical being, and I can be loved outside of that. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge kind of place to be in your life, you know, mm-hmm. and unapologetically be yourself, mm-hmm. because there's a reason why we're all here. Like, that sperm hitting that egg back in 1987 or 1986, whatever. Like, there is a reason and a place for us all in this world. And I really encourage people to try and find their purpose, because I think I found mine. I think I left school, started working straight away, you know, got pregnant, like bought a house, all that kind of stuff. I did kind of things unconventionally. And now I'm in a position where I'm opening my own business to help people who are going through what I went through. And I think that actually finding that little purpose in your life, like, really gives great depth to your life, and to be able to help people like you're doing with your podcast and your books, and the kind of impact that has on others is quite astronomical. Mm.
Do you ever take a moment these days to take stock, and are you proud of yourself?
I don't actually. I should do. Like, yesterday I was like crying in my bed, like going, I was just like, oh my God, Claire. Like, I was like, these shows are coming to an end. I've done 10 in a year and I can't really fit any more in with opening up my own business and all that kind of stuff. So I was kind of like, I can't believe you did that. Like, I can't believe you've sold out shows and got up and told a story, and kind of, I can't believe it. And I was kind of really sad then. I was like, oh, that kind of is ending for me now, but something else amazing is coming along. But yeah, I don't give myself enough credit, really. And I don't, I'm not great at like patting myself on the back ever. It's not kind of way I brush it off. Like, that's just grand, you know, or.
Well, take the opportunity to pat yourself on the back, because I think people have a fear of doing it in case it ever seems arrogant or whatever. But like, if you're going to be confident, and if you're going to, you know, be striving for the different successes that you're going for, you know, what's the point if you can't be proud of yourself and be like, wow, I did a really good thing there.
Yeah.
You know,
I think I'm proud of Ian, and I'm proud of kind of all of us to be able to get through that shit time, and we can still tolerate each other, first of all, but like, I'm proud of that. That's kind of what I'm proud of, that we got through it together, and we kind of recognize, like, we were doing an interview, the two of us, the other day, and like, he was like, I respect Claire an awful lot more now. I always respect her, but I respect her hugely now.
Really?
Because of what she's done and how she's had an effect on other people. And
yeah, you turned it into something that helps other people, which is why the money giving out is bullshit.
I know, yeah.
You know, you've done something good with something bad.
Yeah, and I think that it's kind of like a nice full circle story. You know, that kind of way, like, and I am proud, Caroline. I just realised, no, I am. I just don't like to think about it too much because maybe then it will kind of scare me a little bit or I feel intimidated slightly. But no, it's been a tough few years, but I wouldn't change any of it.
And if you could go back to yourself in that week from hell,
mm-hmm.
what would you say to yourself now?
Just keep treading water, like keep going. I think like all of us, unfortunately, will be in hell at some point in our life. It's completely unavoidable. And don't get too tired to give a shit about yourself because there's always light at the end of the tunnel. And I know it's so difficult at that instant and that time and you don't believe it.
Yeah.
But you have to keep going. You have to keep trying. You have to try and get yourself out of that hole. And nobody will do it for you.
No.
You know, your husband, your mom, your dad, nobody can do that for you. You have to feel worth. And you have to know that one day you'll feel like yourself again and you'll feel like you're worthy to be here. Because we all are, and we all have a little place in this world, but you really just have to keep going. Don't get too tired to give a shit about yourself.
Claire Ball, thank you so much for joining me on the Anxiety Podcast. I loved chatting to you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.